Speed headlong into a fast and furious world of savage high seas warfare. Ambushed and left for dead by your evil brother, your consuming passion is revenge. Commanding a series of increasingly lethal gunboats, you'll go ship to ship in a high-speed, high-stakes combat in a desperate bid to preserve freedom on the Dragon Seas.
Nice. You can really tell we're going to get into a fun, high-seas, swashbuckling adventure.
Right? Yeah.
Well, before we get started, let's just introduce ourselves. Chris is still out of commission this week, so hopefully he'll feel better soon. So you just got me, Michael Colby, and our guest today is Matthew Cole from Debate This.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Great. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, we're like I was saying, I really enjoy your podcast, so we'll talk about that later in the plug section, but
sure.
Very glad to have you on. So
yeah, I'm happy to be here. I think I saw your post on Facebook about this podcast and immediately was like, "Oh, terrible games you say. I would love to talk about that."
I was surprised at how many people were so enthusiastic about talking about their terrible games. I thought this was just going to be me and Chris talking about, you know, these shitty games because we work together, so we talk about them just at work, and it's like, oh, this would be a fun idea for a podcast. I put one post up on Facebook, and it's like, I had like 30 people like, oh, this is great. Like, I love this terrible game, so let's do that. So, yeah. Very happy with this. Unfortunately, I usually like to play the games that people have come on, but I as far as I could find, this is an Xbox exclusive, an original Xbox exclusive.
It absolutely is, yeah. And I happen to be one of the 100 people left in the country with a functioning original Xbox copy of this game.
And it's not backwards compatible, so like... And I don't have a computer capable of running any sort of Xbox emulator. Like, that's a little advanced for what I can do. So, I watched some videos of this. It reminded me of something I would have played back in the day. Like, back in, what, 2003, 2002?
Yeah. I've got it in front of me. It's 2002 was the release date. Or I guess December 25th of 2001, so basically.
Okay, this seems like right up the alley of what I would have been playing back then, like a Twisted Metal on the Water type, you know, vehicle combat thing. I didn't see too many, like, characters. Are there, like, characters to it, or...?
No, I mean, the whole thing of my memory of this game was, you know, in my neighborhood, I was the Nintendo friend, and then the kid three houses down was the Xbox friend, and the kid beside him was the PlayStation friend. And so in 2000 to like 2004, when it came to multiplayer games, Xbox really had it because it had like Halo and Fusion Frenzy and Bloodwake and a couple of other first party multiplayer games. And so my whole memory of Bloodwake has nothing to do with the plot. It's all going over to my buddy's house and just for hours playing in the deathmatch sort of situation. And I'm sure we played the first player once or twice, or, you know, watched his older brother play through the first player version as we kind of sat in the background and consumed it. But it is not a game that is heavy on plot. But there are some cool boats and some cool guns you can click on, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it looked fun as hell. And really, like, back then, and even now, like, I'll play a game. I don't care, you know, what it looks like or what it, you know, what the storyline is. If it's fun to play, like, that's what I'm playing video games for. So let's do it.
Right, exactly. I actually... So we had set up this recording almost a month ago, and I had to push back. And the week that we were supposed to record, before I knew we were going to have to reschedule, my podcast has tried to break into Twitch streaming a little bit, and we had an open slot in our schedule. And I was like, let's stream Bloodwake. Like, let's log on. I will play the first couple levels of Bloodwake, and we'll see how it goes. And the reason that it has kind of been in the lexicon of debate this is because we did an episode like a year plus ago about what game should be turned into its own comic or comic book movie. And I talked about Bloodwake, and that podcast was the first time I had ever spent any time looking into the plot. And when I fired it up to play on Twitch, I was reminded of how ridiculously 2000s the plot actually is, and how little it matters to the gameplay. Like, it's a fun game to drive your boat around and shoot other boats and watch things explode. And who cares about the plot? Like, it's there, it's not there, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I think it was until, like, Twisted Metal Black before I knew that any of these characters had any sort of backstory. Like, it doesn't matter. With these types of games, you can just sort of do whatever, you know?
Yeah, and Bloodwake, I mean, for one, it's called Bloodwake, but it definitely has that 2000s Xbox era of be careful or you'll cut yourself on all this edge. And the whole plot line is like, you know, you got left for dead at sea by your evil brother who has gone on to rule some evil Navy fleet. And you get picked up by an enemy Navy fleet, and you're this, like, anti-hero protagonist who is tormenting sea merchants to make money to take down your brother's evil boat empire or whatever. Like, it's Hydro Thunder with guns, or it's Twisted Metal on water.
Yeah.
But they definitely ladled some 2000s plot on it. And if there's one thing of that plot that I remember, it's just how bad the voice acting is. I don't have anything else from it. It's just the voice acting.
I'll grab some audio clips of some of the bad voice acting, and I'll plug it in right around here, because I was watching it on mute, so I was just watching the actual gameplay. But I'll see if I can find some good clips and, you know, go ahead and and give some examples of how that's going. But that's also, like, this era is not really known for its fantastic acting or anything like that.
Yeah.
Like, this is firmly in the Silent Hill, Resident Evil territory of, you know, we're just starting to put voice acting in our games. We're not going to hire, you know, voice actors. We're just going to have Steve from accounting do the voices.
Right, exactly. And all the cutscenes of this game, too, I think there's a YouTube video that's like all Bloodwake cutscenes or something like that. They're all these, like, animated, but animated is a really hard word, man. They're just like pictures that kind of fade in and out like everybody's first PowerPoint presentation. And there's just this scripted VO over top of it. And then, of course, you're hit with the Xbox 5-minute loading screen. But it's got some real nostalgia to that era where, like, you know, these days I play a lot of games for plot, or I at least follow a lot of games for plot, and there seems to be so much emphasis on that. Even something like Breath of the Wild has so much more plot in it than, like, Ocarina of Time ever did. And there are games like, you know, The Last of Us or Horizon Zero Dawn or Nier Automata that are just, like, dripping with plot. And it really harkened me back to a time when, like, who cares what the plot was, man? Like, we're having fun. We're shooting boats. It doesn't matter. And it's fun to play a game, or I was feeling like it was fun to play this game a couple months ago or a couple weeks ago, that felt like the mechanics are okay for the era. I get what I'm doing. I'm just blowing things up. And I don't really care what else comes with it. I don't need to buy a game for the A-plus acting or because Norman Reedus is full motion captured into it. It's just, it's dumb and fun, and I can click heads for a while.
Yeah, dumb and fun is, I think, underrated anymore. There was a time when it was like I was playing like Skyrim and like Assassin's Creed Odyssey and like all these huge open world games, and then Bayonetta 2 came out on Switch, and I was like, all right, let's try that. And then it's like, oh, here you have, this is a level, and you go and you play through the level, and there's a boss at the end of the level, you beat the boss, and then you go on to the next level. And I'm like, it felt so like new and interesting to go through a level, beat a boss, and then go to the next level. So like, I get what you're saying there. Like, yeah, we don't have to worry about what's actually going on in the game. We don't have to search every corner of every, you know, area that we get to for every secret thing, so we can open up a thing to get a secret treasure or whatever. It's just like, you play the game, you have fun, and then you're done playing the game, and you can go on to something else or play the next section of the game that you're playing.
Yeah, and I think that this era of the like 2000s to 2010s was kind of where that line started to get really blurry. You know, like you had games in the early Xbox era, like Fusion Frenzy comes to mind, or Bloodwake as well, that have some contrived plot, but like, you know, we're all playing on the couch, it doesn't matter, we're having a good time. And then Halo is one of the first, at least Xbox games, that I can think of where, yeah, it was fun to just like sit on the couch with your buddies and play in Blood Gulch for an hour and a half, but also you could play this really in-depth single-player campaign mode. And I think from that, the decision was made that, like, okay, every game's got to have that much plot. And that was where things really went off the rails.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I think, like, indie developers are getting back into sort of the traditional, you know, the traditional game styles of back then. Like, even something as stupid as, what's that one that just came out on PlayStation? Like that big dumb party game with the big jelly bean people.
Heave Ho is all I got. I don't know if that's the one you're thinking
of.
Oh,
no, it's more recent than that. But like, it's a big dumb party game, and you know, they sort of get into that sort of, you know, either 8-16-bit side scrolling, or like one of these arena type games. Because the AAA people aren't going to do that sort of thing anymore. And that's, yeah. I think, well, maybe not too bad, because there is enough, you know, it's easy enough to get a game published nowadays that the indie developers can do stuff like that, and there's a big enough crowd for them to make money off of stuff like that. But yeah, that was what video games were back then.
Right. Yeah. I think, we just did a podcast episode about Hades, and that's a game I've never played, but all of my friends have played, so I've heard enough about it at this point to really kind of get the grasp. And that seems like a really good balance of a game that has fun mechanics and is fun to play, but also has a ton of plot in the flavor text and in between levels, that if you want to just rush through a roguelike run of Hades, you can do that. And if you want to talk to every NPC and really get the flavor and the character development, that's there for you too. But it doesn't make one incredibly reliant on the other.
Yeah. I also haven't played Hades yet, but, it does sound amazing, and the indie games are sort of, because right now, I mean, I'm a 42-year-old man. I have a hard time getting into one of these games that I know for a fact I'm gonna need to spend 60 hours just to get through the plot. So I'm leaning in a little bit more to these types of games, like, you know, like an arena shooter, something I keep calling this an arena shooter. It's not exactly that, but it's that sort of style, uh-huh, of, you know, more casual, get in, you know, play a couple of rounds, play a couple of levels, and then you can just get out. Because it, you know, I don't have to worry about spending 40 hours of my life in a video game. And that's cool. Like, that's cool and fun.
Yeah, right? I was reminded of something really interesting when I was playing Bloodwake the other day, and that was that in Bloodwake, you didn't have to aim. Like, you just pointed your boat in a direction, and the reticle would auto-lock for you. And so all you did was you drive your boat, you make your boat go, you make your boat stop, and then you hold the trigger button. And then you can also switch weapons. And that's, like, the beginning, middle, and end of the game. And that simplicity, I think, for me, adds a lot of enjoyment for that exact reason. That, like, I can sit down and play 25 minutes of this game. I mean, I'm not going to do that because it takes 25 minutes for my Xbox to boot up. But I can sit down and play 25 minutes, half an hour of a game like Bloodwake, and not be afraid that I'm going to spend 15 of those 30 minutes in a cutscene.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying that's bad. There are people who are super into that, and there are games that have 30-minute cutscenes that I love, and there are games with deep plot that I love, but I get a lot of simple joy out of, I have 20 minutes to kill before I need to head out to work, and I'm going to sit down and bust a level out in this game and walk away from it, and that's it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of roguelikes for that exact reason. You know, I have time before I go to work. I'm going to do a run. And unfortunately, sometimes those runs are better than I want them to be for that time. And yeah. Then I'll have to. So even a roguelike isn't quite that. But this thing, yeah, if for some reason I can get my hands on an original Xbox, I think I will actually seek this out because, you know, like I said, I do listen to your podcast and I have heard you guys talk about it before. And then once you suggested it for this show, I did, you know, watch some videos and I'm like, yeah, this is exactly the sort of thing that I was into back then and still get into every once in a while. So yeah, there really is something to be said for a video game that's just fun.
Yeah.
We need to
petition Microsoft and get Bloodwake on Game Pass. Put Bloodwake on Microsoft Game Pass.
Oh, that would be perfect. Yeah, as far as I can tell, it's not even backwards compatible now.
No, it's super not.
Yeah, which is too bad. There's a lot of weird, like, smaller games that are backwards compatible and are showing up on, like, Games with Gold lately that I'm like, wow, I never heard of this. But then I'll play it and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is definitely an early 2000s game.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's fun sometimes. So, yeah, there's not really any reason. You know, this is the second week in a row on this show that we've decided to petition a major company to do something with their games. Last week we were petitioning Konami to start making Castlevania games again and also remake Lifeline.
Perfect. Yeah. A valiant battle. I am happy to the charge on opening the Microsoft Theater and taking this battle two-pronged and trying to get them to put Bloodwake on Game Pass. It really is an early era Xbox game that I would say is worth playing even in 2021. I mean, it doesn't look great and the controls are certainly not modern, but as a collector of retro games and as someone who really loves games from really 99 to like 2009, there's some real garbage that made a lot of money in that 10-year span. And Bloodwake is on the higher end of that garbage pile.
Yeah. That's a weird time in games where I was the PlayStation friend. I was mm-hmm. the one who always had the PlayStation stuff. And I've been playing some of those PlayStation 1 especially games, and you're right, like, they were still figuring everything out. A lot of those games were made without, well, the PlayStation 1 games, not these Xbox games, but they were being made without the dual without the dual analog sticks. And even when they did have the dual analog sticks, a lot of times they didn't even use the right one. So yeah, those controls are like, I was playing Nightmare Creatures a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, wow, if I didn't grow up with this game, this thing would be hot garbage. But since I did grow up with it, you know, it's amazing. And it's also amazing.
Yeah.
It's also amazing. The muscle memory that you get for these games. Like, I knew exactly, like, you know, I haven't played that game for 20 years, and I knew, mm-hmm. you know, which wall I was going to walk past that some sort of werewolf was going to come out of or whatever. And that's, yeah. So that nostalgia does do something for you. But at the same time, these games are also so simple that it's not hard to learn the controls for a game like Bloodwake. Like you said, you don't have to aim your reticle. You just move your boat, get it looking at the thing you want to shoot, and then you can shoot it.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked this era of games too, because it really felt like the games wanted you to beat them. You know, like, you have these Super Nintendo era games that a lot were ported from arcade cabinets, where the difficulty was the selling point.
Yeah.
And these games were designed that you couldn't make it past the second or third stage. They were designed to suck your quarters.
Yeah, the quarter suckers.
Then and then
for back then, they didn't have a lot of room to put a big game on, so they made it hard so that you got a lot of hours out of it, so that it made you feel right. like you got your money's worth.
Exactly. And then with modern games, one of my co-hosts is like a huge fan of Bloodborne and Dark Souls mm-hmm. and those like Souls type games
yeah.
where there is just this super, super high difficulty level. And I dunk on him all the time because I don't enjoy games like that. But I also just don't play games for the clout of beating them, you know? Like, I don't need to be a person who's like, oh yeah, I beat Dark Souls 3. Like, I got that high when I beat Through the Fire and the Flames on Expert in Guitar Hero 3, and I'll never get that high again,
yeah,
so I'm okay not playing games for the difficulty anymore.
That's actually quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, yeah, man. 2007 was a hell of a drug. But I love these older games because they feel like they're designed to be played and designed to be beaten. And Bloodwake reminded me of this mechanic when I was playing it on stream that I was really like, just it opened up so much nostalgia for me. And that was picking the difficulty level at the start of the level, as opposed to picking your difficulty level the minute you turn on the game
yeah.
and then being committed to that save file.
Yeah, then you're
being
stuck with it.
Too hard or too easy for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just playing Killer is Dead, and they have that same thing. They have a pick your difficulty at the beginning of the mission, and I was like, fuck, this is great. Like, that's yeah. And that's a little bit later than this, but it's still a 360 era game. So, but yeah, you're, mm-hmm. you're right that they seem to have split. Like we were talking about,
yeah.
you know, those old games are made to be hard. Like, that's the whole point. And nowadays it seems like, I'm going to sound like such an old person, but now it seems like the games are either, and I'm a Dark Souls fan. We did a top five games of all time, and Bloodborne was both of our number ones. So, like,
perfect.
I'm a huge Bloodborne fan, and really, those games are the hardest at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
because once you level up and learn the mechanics of the games, they do get easier. I'm not going to go into it. I'm not going to try to talk somebody into playing the Dark Souls games, but But yeah, it's either that on that end of the spectrum, or a game that's so easy, like you're the only thing it wants you to do is beat it. You know,
right.
It's going to hold your hand, you know, like the older Uncharted games drove me crazy because when you were platforming, there was no chance that you could, like, it wouldn't let you jump off of a ledge that would kill you. And that drove me insane. So, yeah, in this era, in the Xbox, in the original Xbox and through the 360 era, there is a balance of difficulty and still being able to beat a game.
Yeah, and I really enjoy that. You know, I went back and I was playing GoldenEye for the N64 the other day, and it has that same mechanic of being able to pick your difficulty when you start the level in the campaign. And it just reminded me of how good it feels to challenge yourself but still be able to progress through the story. You know, if you get to a level that you're beating your head against, being able to drop that difficulty level down a peg, get through it, and continue the story. And maybe you come back to beat that level on the expert difficulty later, so you get your 100% reward or whatever, but not being stuck, because that's what's killed me on a lot of games. You know, there are plenty of games that I've left unfinished because I've hit a point in that game that it gets really, really difficult. And it's not that I am incapable of practicing or grinding and finishing it. It's just that, like, I've got a list of games to play that's 10 miles long. I work a full-time job and I have, like, I don't know, 7 hours a week to play video games.
Yeah.
And if it's going to take me 3 hours to play through one level to beat one boss, I'm just going to put it down and play something else. And so having that option to say, like, all right, I get it. I'm a little bitch boy. I can't beat this level. I'm going to move on. I'll come back and play it later. Let me put it on medium or easy, and I'll see you when I need to get the completionist tab.
Yeah. I've definitely gone back to levels so that at least, you know, when my friends are, like, comparing the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 era was the worst for this, where they were like, beat the game on easy, beat the game on normal, beat the game on hard, beat the game. And then if you changed it to easy for one thing, because I did this on Brutal Legend, I couldn't beat.
Yeah,
I was playing
Brutal
that.
Legend.
I was playing that on hard, and I could not beat the last, like, RTS section, so I turned it down, and then my achievement for Brutal Legend says beat game on medium, and I'm like, fuck.
Oh,
I turned it down for one thing.
Yeah, gosh. I remember I think it was probably Super Smash Brothers Melee that it started in, where to unlock characters you had to beat the game on easy and this character will show up, beat the game on medium and this character will show up, and that sort of continued through the Smash franchise, because that's a game that I've sunk 15 years of my life into at this point. And it hit a point, I remember, where instead of it needing to be, okay, slog through the whole game on easy, slog through the whole game on medium, it became, if you beat the game on easy or anything harder than that, this character will show up.
Yep.
And I just, not that I want my games to hold my hand or coddle me or anything like that, but again, you know, time is limited, and as I get older and have less time to just sit down and play games all day, I want to have the experience of finishing these games, and I want to get the story, and I want to play the game. I wouldn't have bought it if I didn't want to, but I don't want to feel like I have to dedicate more time than I have to playing a game just to get the experience that everybody else has had.
Yeah, there are some games where the experience is the thing, and I will put my time into experiencing that thing. And then there are some games where it's just like, this thing is cool to look at and I want to know what happens, but the gameplay is not good enough to warrant, you know, taking 60 hours of my life. So yeah, switch that down to easy. But yeah, instead of,
we finished,
go ahead.
Okay. We played Heavy Rain on our stream a couple of months ago. And, I'm a big fan of David Cage games. I am not a big fan of David Cage, but we had played Detroit Become Human and really enjoyed it. And so some of our friends told us, like, well, if you enjoyed Detroit Become Human, you've got to go back and play Heavy Rain, because that was sort of what started that idea. And we went back and played it. And that was a game that, like, the mechanics and the gameplay was such garbage that it took away from all of the plot.
Yeah.
That we wanted to finish the game. We wanted to know what happened. But by the end of the second or third 2-hour block of all of us playing this game, we were like, God, this sucks. This isn't fun. I'm not having a good time. I can't even focus on what's going on because I hate this so much. There's definitely that balance of, like, I want to get the plot, so give me an option to get the plot. But if you make your mechanics so bad or if your game is so hard, either way, I'm just not going to enjoy it.
Yeah, you would think that in between Indigo Prophecy, which I did really like, and then Detroit Become Human, which I did really like, you would think that the one in the middle there, Heavy Rain, would have been something that, but, like, it might get good, but you have to do so much, like, nonsense bullshit to do anything in that game. And it's like, you're right, that one's just not enjoyable. we are getting dangerously close to just turning this episode of the podcast into two old guys talking about how it used to be, when we were kids. So I'm going to try to get this back on track a little bit. I do think we pretty much summed up, you know, sort of what Bloodwake was. I think you did a very good job of explaining why you like it. Like, and it does definitely seem like, I'm on the Metacritic page, and there are not nearly as many bad reviews for this game as we usually see on this show. Like, this is a pretty, well, for the critics, it's a pretty, like, medium reviewed game, but for fans, like, it's a very well reviewed game. People seem to enjoy it, and I think being this type of game really does help it. Just the fact that it's, you know, you can have fun playing it by yourself, you can have fun playing it with friends. It's just fun. It seems like that's what you're getting here. You're just getting a fun game.
Yeah. I'm looking at, like, a cumulative review score, and it seems to sit anywhere between, like, a 5 to 7 out of 10 as far as critics go. And I think that this is a game, I know the name of the show is I Love This Terrible Game. And I think it's hard to call Bloodwake a terrible game in 2002. But by 2004, this game is hot garbage. Yeah. It just becomes so retroactively bad. The farther you get away from it. And, you know, we talked about the cutscenes and stuff earlier. It's got this whole, like, Asian inspired motif where you're part of the Shadow Clan, and I'm looking for the plot here. Your name is Lieutenant Shao Kai, and your brother is Shao Lung, and your mentor is Ped Zhang. And then everybody's, like, voiced by a white dude who sounds like he's from outside of New York City. Like, it's got some really terrible pieces to it that, as soon as you lose the context of, yeah, I mean, this was an Xbox exclusive in 2002, it gets really bad really fast. Especially, you know, with, like, it doesn't control the best. It doesn't look the best. And I'm not typically one to look back on a game and say that it's terrible, because I do like retro games, and I got a lot of appreciation for games as they were in the time. But I also know that in 2002, we were doing a hell of a lot better than Bloodwake. Like, there was better shit out there to play than this game.
Yeah, that's my constant gripe with games. Like, even going back to NES and Super Nintendo, you know, there's so much garbage out there. And then it's like, and then Earthworm Jim and these Disney games with, like, the smooth animations and the amazing tight controls, you know, they could do that on these consoles. There's no reason that they weren't always doing that. Like, there's no reason that the Home Improvement game should have came out, or the Beethoven game back then should have come out.
You know, this game came out at the end of 2001 and basically 2002, and I popped a cursory Google search of best games of 2002. And so to see what else you could be playing other than really wet. Oh boy, I lost the punchline of the joke that I set up. What's Twisted Metal? Something other than playing wet Twisted Metal. Like, Grand Theft Auto Vice City came out in 2002. Super Mario Sunshine came out in 2002. Metroid Prime. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4.
Oh,
like,
dude.
Elder Scrolls 3. Medal of Honor. Allied Assault came out. Like, there were a lot of better ways to spend your time in 2002 than playing Bloodwake. And so, yeah, I mean, it got decent critical reception, but man, even to look back at what was going, Kingdom Hearts came out in 2002. Like, just to look back at what else was happening.
Yeah.
It really puts it into perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, there's no reason that we can't talk shit on these games. Like, there's always a section of these episodes where, you know, it's like, oh well, I realized that this but it's still worth playing. So, you know, I think knowing the flaws of a game is actually beneficial, because, you know, a lot of people get so invested in these games that if you say anything bad about them, they're like, oh, well, you know, then you'll get into an argument. It's fine to enjoy a game that you know isn't the best game that there, you know, that ever was made. Like I said, I was enjoying Nightmare Creatures while I was playing it. Like, I was playing Wild 9 on the PlayStation 1. And I'm like, that one actually holds up a lot better than a lot of PlayStation 1 era games.
Yeah.
But it's still, like, I'm playing it and I'm like, man, if they made this now, there would be, like, 12 people that loved this game and would fight to the death for it. But most people would be like, this sucks.
Right. And I agree, man. There's so much benefit to just being realistic about the things that you like and the games that you like. My favorite console, and it's because it was my console growing up and the one that I sunk the most hours into, is the N64. And there's not a single good looking N64 game, not a single one. All of them look terrible, and most of them control terrible, and I love them. I still love playing them. I'm playing GoldenEye right now. I'm getting ready to start Perfect Dark. Anytime I'm sick, I still sit down and bust out Pokemon Snap, which I'm very excited is getting a sequel. I love N64 games. I'm also not going to tell anybody that they look great, or that we should revisit the 64-bit era and that was the peak of gaming. It wasn't.
Yeah.
I still think GoldenEye is the best multiplayer shooter ever, but I'm not going to argue with you when you tell me that I'm wrong.
Yeah, I actually, once you started that sentence, I was like, I know what he's going to say here, because I saw that shelf behind you with all those N64 games on it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I was the PlayStation friend. So playing, you know, when we went over to my Nintendo friend's house, you know, we would play WCW versus NWO.
Oh man.
And GoldenEye and all of those types of games, and we had tons of fun with those. But even back then, I'm like looking at the games that I'm playing on the PlayStation 1, and I'm like, these look bad, and this controller it feels bad in my hands. But these games are so much fun. Like, I still think that those are the best wrestling games that they ever made. Were those WCW versus NWO, like the... I think it was the WCW ones that were the best ones. There was, like, three of them
yeah.
on the N64?
Yeah. I think that's right. I got into wrestling games more in the GameCube era than I did in the N64 era. So I'm not super sure, but three sounds right.
Yeah. I know that there was at least two, and then there was maybe it was the three WWF games, but whatever it was, like that, it, like those games were the best wrestling games, and they looked terrible and they were slow, but they were fun to play. And that's I think what we're looking at from this era of video games is, you know, we're still trying to figure out how these games are supposed to look and feel. So we're just concentrating on making them fun to play so that people would keep playing them. And I think there's something to be said about that.
I 100% agree. I mean, I think that gaming has had a big change as well in what the required longevity of a game is for it to be worth somebody's purchase. You know, like, now we talk about replayability and length of story and length of 100% completion, and, you know, there are game awards and game of the year editions and all of these things that way back in 2002 or 2000, like, man, if it was on the cover of Nintendo Power, I was going to buy it. It doesn't matter if it was good or not. I was going to play it anyway. And I have a lot of games. I mean, I've kept almost all of the games I've gotten in my life. I have plenty of games that I played for 12 or 15 hours, and I said, that was fine, and I spent $40 a month later on a new game to play for 12 or 15 hours.
Yeah, and that's how I like to play games. I like to start a game and finish it, and then, you know, people bitch about DLC, but, you know, if you have, like, my favorite game in the past couple years was Control. Control rules. The game is awesome. It has no multiplayer. You know, I went back to do some open world stuff, like cleanup stuff, but I'm never going to play through Control again. And then a couple months later, some DLC came out. Cool. Played through that. Put it back away. A couple months later, the other DLC came out. Played through that. Put it away. Like, that's actually what I want out of my game. I don't want to have to, you know, feel like I need to play the multiplayer or, you know, get the skins or, you know, do this and that in order to justify my purchase. Like, just give me a fun game. I don't care if it's 20 hours. Give me a 20-hour fun game. Thank you so much. Like, that's what I wanted. Here's $60. Like, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of my favorite games out of the last, you know, generation of games. We were talking about story-driven and David Cagey games, and it's not David Cage, but Until Dawn was a favorite of mine for that same reason that, like, the whole story is, like, 8 hours, if that. If you read every pamphlet and open every door. Realistically, you can beat it in like six. And then my other game that I've sunk most of my life into is the Super Mario Maker series or Mario Maker 2, where I can play that game for exactly as long as I have to play it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I have 10 minutes, I can sit down and play a level and put it down and walk away. If I have the day off and I want to sit down and create all day or play through somebody's created world, I can do that too. But there's no commitment when I pick up the controller. You know, if I start playing it and then work calls me in, I can click close and come back and play it later and not be concerned about making it to a save point or catching up on the story or losing track of where I am or what my goal is or anything like that. I mean, I loved Breath of the Wild. It was an incredible gaming experience, and I can't say enough good things about it. But every time I played Breath of the Wild, if I didn't save the game with Link looking in the direction I was supposed to be going, I would turn that game on a week later and be like, I don't know what the fuck I'm supposed to do right now. Yeah. Where was I going? What was I doing? I'm just going to walk straight until I find a waypoint.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild was amazing while I was playing it. And then after I beat it, I tried to go back and, like, because, you know, everybody's talking about, oh, this amazing open world and you can do this and that. And I'm like, all right, well, let's try to do all that stuff. And then I'm like, oh, I was having a lot of fun doing the story in this, but I don't think I can play this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I've got, again, one of my other co-hosts who's into different games than me is playing through Persona 5 right now, or maybe Persona 5 the Royal. I don't know. They're all just words to me. And he was like, yeah, it's like a 75-hour campaign. And I was like, dude, that's a lot of time. I don't have that kind of commitment. Like, there's no way that I could play a 75-hour game right now in 2021. I can't keep focus for that long.
For someone who was talking shit on long games, I did beat Persona 5 at about 90 hours, and then I did buy Persona 5 Royal because fucking hell, that is a good game. I haven't played through, I'm about halfway through it at about 40 hours. I have put 130 hours into Persona 5, and I don't feel bad about it. Like, but that is a rare, that is a very rare exception where I'll do something like that.
For sure. And it is great, you know, to find those games that you can sink time into. We were talking about arena shooters. My secret passion outside of, like, story games is Overwatch. I love Overwatch, and it's really been my game of COVID-19, because it came out on Switch and was easy to play on Switch, and my buddies all got it. And so I've sunk like 350 hours in the last 8 months into Overwatch, which is more time than I've spent on a game since I was like 18. And yeah, it's just fun to have that game that you can spend that much time in, and I love it. But if every game required that much time from me, I would never play games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I'm on the same boat. Every once in a while, I'll find something like my Bloodborne save probably has 400 hours in it. And I don't do that. Like, I don't replay games, and I don't play games for that long. But once in a while, I find one, and it just clicks. Like, there are very few games that I'll still be playing 6 or 7 years later. I think Bloodborne came out in 2014, 2015. There are very few games that I'll still be playing in 5 or 6 years. But sometimes you find one that you do.
Yeah, and when you find them, it's great. I mean, Pokemon Blue, I think, was the first game that I went over 100 hours on, and then over 200 hours on, and then over 300 hours on, and then I think my, you know, again, I haven't played Pokemon Blue in 20 years, but it's probably got 400 hours on that save file if I were to dig out a Game Boy Color and fire it back up. And we talked amongst ourselves on my podcast a couple of months ago about what the first game we put 1,000 hours into. And I came up to the realization that mine was Guitar Hero 2. And so looking at the games that I have spent tons and tons and tons of time on, it's not games that take 75, 80, 90 hours to beat them. It's games that can entertain me for 1 hour, and I can play for 1 hour every day for a year and a half.
Yep. No, and that's Bloodborne for me, and also like the Rock Band games. Like, I've spent, when I got my new Xbox One, and it's like, oh, we're getting your your DLC songs, it's like ticking up, and it's like, nope, there goes 200, there goes 300, there goes 400. It's like, oh no, I can't believe those are $2 a piece for those songs. How much money did I spend on Rock Band? But I don't feel bad about it, because we enjoy, like, it's one of the few things where, like, I can get my whole family sitting around together and we'll just play Rock Band, and it's fun for everyone. So I don't feel bad about spending all that money on that game.
Right. And I'm sure that some Forbes think piece would say that if you just skipped out on your coffee once a day from Starbucks, you too could afford 300 Rock Band DLC songs.
I'm also not giving up my coffee every day.
You got to get your priorities in order. That's right. Do what you love.
That's right. I can't pay the electric bill this month, but at least I have all of these Rock Band songs.
Yeah, I can play Say It Ain't So and drink a caramel frappe, so I'm okay.
I'll just use the generator to power up the TV and the Xbox. All right, well, this is about the time in the show where we go into the bad reviews, but like I said, I couldn't find many bad reviews, and the two that I did find are very short and not, like, we usually have a lot of fun making fun of the people who write these bad reviews, because they're often very passionate about how bad they think these games are, but these are like, whatever. I got one here.
Yeah.
I got one here from Metacritic. SUCKS. I cannot understand how this sucky game has got so high score. This game don't have anything good in it. That's the whole review.
This game don't have anything good.
No, nothing good.
I always want to know when I read bad reviews like that, like, when did you play the game? You know, does that review have a published date on it?
September 7th, 2005.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, a lot of better things had come out in 3 years. I probably wouldn't understand why Bloodwake had good review either. No good thing in Bloodwake compared to Halo 2.
I mean, I'm also looking at a 9 from 2017, so...
Wow. I super didn't write that review. That's definitely not me.
Are you MK Harris 08?
No. I'm MC Harris 09, actually.
And then this other one... People with ADD will drop out first, followed by those looking for instant graphic gratification, then casual gamers, and lastly the diehards. So it was sort
All
of.
Right.
I mean, yeah, and this there's nothing in any of these reviews that you haven't already said. So I think you've summed up. I think you've summed up the game and, you know, sort of the feeling about the game.
So I was on the hunt. I was determined to find some bad reviews, and I found bad product reviews on Amazon. So I have a couple of bad Amazon reviews.
Cool.
That are pretty good. If you'll give me a chance to read a
Absolutely.
Few of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. January 20th of 2002, I rented this game to play with my girlfriend. After watching the uninspiring cutscenes, which could have been done on a Super NES, we were ready for the boating action. Unfortunately, the deathmatch and story games are both so bleak and repetitive, this game would qualify as the first shareware Xbox game, except it costs as much as a quality game like Halo. After a few games, I returned it straight to Blockbuster, even though there were still 3 days left on rental. I'm glad I bought SSX Tricky just after I rented Bloodwake.
Oh, SSX Tricky is really good.
SSX Tricky is phenomenal. I've got that one, too. That game rips. This is a really good one from February 1st of 2002 from Lori Peters titled, What Happened? It seems like the people at Microsoft said, water is good. Can we make a game out of that? The first time you'll play, you'll say, Did I shoot or what? That's how bad the sound is. The boats handle like 18-wheelers. The okay graphics are the only thing that it has going for it. Is this the kind of game we can expect from the mighty Xbox? If so, I'm pawning mine. And some of you thought this was a 5-star game? What is wrong with you? I'm serious. What is it? All I can say now is, what happened?
What is wrong with you? How dare you have a different opinion than I do?
I got one more, and I really like this one. It's also from 2005. Not by MK Harris, though. This must be his buddy Jay Freeman. The review titled, what? Okay, it's called Bloodwake. Where's the blood? And a 7-year-old could beat this game easily. I should know. I watched one play. This game sucks. Oh boy.
But did he play it?
He watched a 7-year-old play it, and that was apparently all of the info he needed.
Yeah, that's one of the things about a lot of these bad reviews is, like, you can tell that they played it for an hour or not at all. And it's like,
yeah.
I don't know if playing a game for 20 minutes, you know, it allows you to have an opinion strong enough to give this thing a 0-star review or whatever.
Right. Let's make it very clear that after we've spent an hour talking about how we like to play games for 1 hour at a time, playing a game for 1 hour at a time does not give you the right to have an opinion.
Well, not if you're only playing it for an hour.
yeah, you've got to play it for an hour a couple of
times.
Yes,
at least a couple of times, for Pete's sake. All right, so Matt, thank you so much for being on. This was very, very much fun. It was funny because I turned the, once the video came on, I was like, oh no, this is like looking in a mirror almost. Except for the long hair. I was like,
Yeah, we definitely have a similar look.
So. That has nothing to do with anything, but
it's important to remember. It's important for the listeners.
I just wanted this audio podcast. Yeah, since this is an audio podcast, I just wanted everyone to know that Matt looks a lot like I do, except with long hair. So, Matt, I'm just going to ask you for one thing, and that's I want you to plug all of your stuff, because honestly, I listen to your podcast. I haven't watched your Twitch stream, but I would like you to let everybody know that as well, because I think everybody who likes this show will definitely like your stuff.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on. I've been trolling that one Facebook page waiting for other video game podcasts to appear, and was stoked to finally find one. So I'm glad we could make this work, but yeah. I am from a podcast called Debate This. We argue about stupid comic book and video game questions that no one is asking. We just did what non-Greek god should be the next Hades DLC. We have also done what classic game series should be made into a dating sim. And we kicked off our fourth season this year with which Pac-Man ghost is the scariest?
That one was awesome.
We are really all over the board. Our which Pac-Man ghost is the scariest is a continuation of dumb topics such as what color Yoshi is the best and what Tetris piece is the best Tetris piece. So if you're into things like that, we are the podcast for you. You can find us, Debate This, wherever podcasts are podcasted, and on all the social medias at Debate This Cast. We also did start Twitch streaming. We just made Twitch affiliate, which is kind of fun. We stream Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, as what we call Monday Night Football. It has nothing to do with football, but nobody else was using that phrase, so we decided to take it. We just played through the first chapter of Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc, and I think are moving on to something different this week. But we play that. And on Wednesdays, one of my other co-hosts does Weeb Wednesdays, where he's currently playing through Persona 5 The Royal. And I'll pop on sometimes and stream Overwatch or One of our other guys streams a lot of Magic the Gathering Arena. So if you're into that sort of thing, twitch.tv/debatethiscast. If you're looking for us on socials, debatethiscast. And if you want podcasts, it's just Debate This. And I think that's all I got.
Yeah, and these guys are definitely hilarious, so I'm sure that their streams are going to be very entertaining. And for some reason, one of my favorite things to watch is people playing card games. So, like, I've been watching people play Monster Train. Wow. That I don't know why that's so much fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when you find a game that you have interest in, watching other people play it is almost just as fun as playing it yourself.
Yeah, as long as they're enjoying themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I definitely, if you're going to download an episode of Debate This to see if you like it, that which Pac-Man ghost is the scariest is one of the fucking wildest things I've ever heard. Yeah, it's really great. So just like always, I'm going to plug Jack Billings Presents, Me and My Neighbor Michael, a weird comedy podcast about neighborhood goings-on in an alternate universe, Reading, Ohio. Chris, who will be back at some point, I don't know when, he's healing up from some stuff, so we'll let him talk about that if he wants to when he's back, but yeah, but he's on it, and it's just a really weird show. And then I will plug Twitch's, Chris's Twitch channel, which is, Zeno, Z-E-N-O underscore N-O-X. We also got a Twitter going for this show, which is I-L-T-T-G podcast, on Twitter. And then I'm at my neighbor M-I-C-H-1, and I'm not telling the story of why I have such a shitty Twitter handle again. but thank you so much, Matt. It's been a pleasure. Definitely go check out Bloodwake and Debate This, and you'll have a fun time. That'll be a fun weekend.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And thanks again for having me on. I really had a blast.
All right. Awesome.
Anytime you want to talk about other terrible games, you let me know.
Oh, boy. Will do.